The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry. And today I'm going to be talking about the Russian collusion scandal. Something I don't usually get into, Mr. Flurry covers that pretty thoroughly. But there's a fascinating European angle to it that I think you will not have heard much about, but could have a very important impact on the world. We'll get to that shortly. But first, and closely related to that, today is Election Day. And so is tomorrow. And Saturday. And Sunday, because we're talking about European Parliament and elections. And, of course, the EU could not agree on just one day to hold elections, so they're stretched over four. The UK and the Netherlands will be voting today. We'll talk about some of the ramifications for Europe later, but it could have some major implications for the UK. The Brexit Party, led by Nigel Farage, is forecast to win, which is pretty incredible. This party didn't exist a few months ago, has pretty much come together. Nigel Farage, he used to lead UKIP. He left UKIP. He didn't like the direction that they were taking. He went and he founded his own new party. And they seem set to become by far the biggest in these elections. The Conservative Party are forecast to do incredibly badly, potentially even coming in fourth place. And if that happens, if we see this, the governing party going in fourth place, the Brexit Party winning by a landslide, well, if that happens, that will be a big moment for British politics. Alex Massey had an article for CapEx yesterday. British politics is broken and about to get a lot worse. He wrote, "These elections to the European Parliament are going to be a massacre, a moment when the inadequacies of both traditional parties are all too evident. This is going to be ugly and little good can come of it." He went on to write, "In one sense, it will be a moment of catharsis. The elections are dominated by Brexit and the failure of our political class to find a solution that both upholds the referendum results and guarantees a measure of continuity that, amongst many other concerns, would reassure British businesses that there are at least some adults in the room." He writes that these elections will be a collective howl of despondency, a national declaration that this should not be as good as it gets, that there must be some, any, alternatives. And that's what you see when you see these new parties winning huge amounts of votes, when you see the two main parties, Labour and Conservative, both forecast to do incredibly badly. It's a cry for, as he said, some alternative, any alternative, because just about all of the mainstream leaders have let the nation down. Well, we'll see what happens, but the elections will probably show, like I said, this extreme level of dissatisfaction with the way the UK is governed. And with these elections and with the run-up to these elections beginning today, we saw a lot of drama in UK politics this week. On Tuesday evening, Prime Minister Theresa May outlined her latest plans for Brexit, and that triggered a scream of outrage from her party. She said that she's going to take her deal that she's agreed with the European Union, that the Parliament has rejected three times. She's going to put it to Parliament a fourth time. But to try and entice some Labour voters to support it, she's going to include a provision this time when she puts it to Parliament that would pave the way for a second referendum. And not just any second referendum. A rerun of the first referendum would be bad enough. Britain was told, we were told then, do you want to leave the EU? And there were all of these politicians. If we had a bit more staff in this morning, I probably would have looked up the sound bites, but we were a pretty shorthanded ship today. But we had all of these leaders saying, well, this is a once-in-a-lifetime vote. think carefully about which way you vote, because there's going to be no second chances. You're not going to be asked again. They said, you know, we're going to respect the outcome of this vote. Whatever happens, that's it. And to do all that, to hold that vote and then to turn around and say, you got the answer wrong, we're having another vote. And that's not democracy. That's what dictators do. That's what Turkey did. Just a few weeks ago, where Recep Tayyip Erdogan, you know, they lost the election, they lost the local votes in Istanbul, and they said, well, okay, we'll have another one. That's behaving like a dictator. But what the redo that, I mean, we haven't seen the text of the bill yet, but what it's the redo it sounds like she wants is even worse. It would be a vote to, basically the question would be, do you want to stay in the European Union, or do you want Ms. May's deal? Leaving the European Union properly wouldn't even be a question. Now, the politicians couldn't trust the British people with that because they'd probably vote to leave the European Union entirely. Instead, the question would be basically, do you want to not leave the EU or sort of leave the EU? And leaving properly, like I said, not even on the ballot paper. So a lot of people were outraged by this, and outraged where she basically weakened her... Her deal already didn't really take Britain out of the European Union very much. She weakened that, again, to try and gain support of Labour members. And so, once this was all unveiled, it triggered another attempt to get rid of Ms. May. One cabinet member, according to the Times, said, I thought she deserved one last roll of the dice, but she took those dice and threw them off the table. This morning, the Times wrote, by yesterday morning, even those who defended her throughout her premiership were demanding that she announce her resignation this week. Many believed that Mrs. May's initial plan had been to stay until the party conference in October or even beyond. However, the events of this week have made that all but impossible. Andrea Leadsom, who is the leader of the House of Commons, a cabinet member basically responsible for presenting the government's bills in the House, she's resigned. She said she can't support this. The 1922 committee, which is the committee that basically organizes the rules surrounding leadership campaigns and things like that, there's a very serious push there to change the rules so that they can get rid of her any day now. I think there was a bit of a push yesterday to see if they could get rid of Ms. May ahead of the European elections. That didn't work. But there's a lot of talk that she might potentially announce her resignation on Friday. So we'll see how that plays out. The Telegraph, their leading article this morning was Theresa May must go now. This is a national emergency. They write, what can the Prime Minister be thinking? Oh, I just got a... Never mind. When you get a breaking news alert these days, it could be her resignation, but it's not. It's just some children's author dying. So back to... The Telegraph, their headline, Theresa May must go now. This is a national emergency. They write, what can the Prime Minister be thinking? It's over. She can no longer pass critical legislation. The latest draft of her withdrawal agreement is dead in the water. Her backbenchers are up in arms. Cabinet members would like to meet to discuss her future. Andrea Leadsom has resigned as leader of the House, saying Britain will not be truly sovereign under the agreement and that government processes have broken down. And yet Theresa May clings on. And then they also write, today, the country votes in European elections, and with every minute Mrs. May stays in power, one can almost visualize the Conservative vote disappearing like dust in the wind. Her resistance, well, they just go on to talk about how she doesn't want to quit. But it's left British politics just in a complete mess. And it brings to mind some of the scriptures that we bring up a fair bit on this program. Hosea 5 and verse 12, for example, talking specifically, a lot of that book of Hosea is specifically about Britain, about biblical Ephraim. And there God says that he will be to Ephraim like a moth. And Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry wrote about this in his book, Hosea Reaping the Whirlwind. And he wrote, a moth-eaten garment looks good in the closet, but take it off the hanger and it falls apart. God says Britain is like a moth-eaten garment. Even though certain things may look good on the surface, it is ready to fall apart. And that's what we saw with Brexit, where, okay, we voted to leave the European Union, and a lot of people, there were a lot of very hopeful statements. how we can move on now and take control of our destiny. And you know, the sun is shining and we've broken into the sunlit uplands. Yet the test comes and it's the political system just about all falls apart. Isaiah 3 talks about God removing the leaders from our nations, from Jerusalem and Judah, it says. Judah refers to the Jews. Jerusalem was the capital city of all of the Israelite tribes during the reigns of David and Solomon. And so it refers to all of the modern nations of Israel, including Britain. God says in there, for example, that he will remove the stay and the staff. The Gesenius' Hebrew Chaldee lexicon of the Old Testament, it defines this as the chief person of a nation on whom the people lean. So God gets rid of the support, the ones that people look to for leadership. And it lists specifics, the mighty man, the man of war, the judge, the prophet, the prudent, the ancient, the captain of 50, the honorable man, and the counselor, the cunning artificer, and the eloquent orator. And the leader in the military, in the judiciary, especially in politics, all the leaders are gone. The book of Proverbs talks about, well, where there is no vision, the people perish. And that's what we're seeing right before our eyes in Britain. Nobody, at least nobody in power at the moment, has any kind of vision for Britain after Brexit. And so we just end up with this confusion and, you know, Parliament repeatedly voting down Theresa May's deal, and then the government turning to Parliament and saying, well, okay, what do you want to do? Do you want to do this? And Parliament says no. Or do you want to do this? No. Do you want to do this? No. Well, you've said no to everything. And that's where we are, because nobody has a clear vision of how to move forward. Isaiah 59 vividly describes the results of this kind of lack of leadership. I'll read from the New Living Translation this time, but it says, we look for light, but find only darkness. We look for bright skies, but walk in gloom. We grope like the blind along a wall, feeling our way like people without eyes. Even at brightest noontime, we stumble as though it were dark. Among the living, we are like the dead. We growl like hungry beasts. We moan like mournful doves. We look for justice, but it never comes. We look for rescue, but it is far away from us. That's been Britain's experience since voting to leave the European Union. And that passage also reveals the cause for this situation. Verse 12 says, for our transgressions are multiplied before you, before God. Isaiah 3 says the same thing. You know, why has this happened? It says, for Jerusalem is ruined and Judah is fallen because their tongue and their doings are against the Lord. It's because of national disobedience that we're in this situation. You know, to a lot of people, EU membership was kind of, or at least Eurosceptics, the EU membership was the source of all Britain's problems, and that leaving would then solve everything. And the last couple of years has proven that wrong. You know, the EU certainly did cause a lot of Britain's problems, but it's not the root cause. It was just a symptom of a deeper sickness. Britain voted to leave, you know, voted to or join the European Union in the first place because of that sickness. You know, the nation's embrace of sin, the nation not trusting God. And so now we've voted to leave the European Union, but we've done nothing to fix those deeper problems. And so we still see this chaotic mess. Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Flurry talked about this in the September 2017, well, his cover article for the Trumpet print. He wrote, many people in the UK were optimistic about the future last year when voters chose to leave the European Union, but things have gotten very messy. He writes, it has taken a few generations for the magnificent British Empire to fall from being the greatest empire in history, but 2017 has been unusually bad. Why? And we've seen 2018 being bad as well. 2019 too. And that article goes on to describe why God has sent curses on this nation, why those curses are coming faster than ever. Now, God does have great plans for Britain. It was he that made it the greatest empire in world history. And that wasn't just well, it was to it was the, a blessing given to the descendants of Abraham, but he wanted Britain to serve as a model nation. If you look in Deuteronomy, he says that he wanted, Deuteronomy 4 verse 8, he wanted the descendants of Abraham, he wanted his people Israel to be a people that would cause others to look at them and say, and what nation is there so great that has statutes and judgments so righteous as this law that I set before you? He wanted them to be an example to other nations. But that's not what we ended up being. Instead, we've ended up being an example of disobedience and sin. And so now, well, God is correcting us. He's correcting America. He's correcting all the nations of Israel. But once they turn to him, they'll have an opportunity to be that example that they weren't before, to set that example that they failed to set in the past. So, yes, it's been some very frustrating times just to see all of this fall apart. But there's a very strong, very powerful reason for it. God's correcting our nations, and it's leading to a wonderful, wonderful outcome. That article I quoted from earlier from Mr. Flurry, the title of that was The Fall of the British Royal Family. You can read that on our website, thetrumpet.com. You just go to library, and then you can see all of our past issues of The Trumpet magazine there. You can also read our free book, The United States and Britain and Prophecy. That will really go into detail of God's plan for Britain, for America, show you how they're described in the Bible, really give you proof after proof that shows that these biblical passages apply to Britain and America. It will really help you understand what's going on in world events for both these nations. It really is a foundational book to understanding these events, and you can read that on our website as well. That's thetrumpet.com. And again, if you go to library and then go to books and booklets, and you can get a copy of that book there. Now, there's one more story I just wanted to talk about briefly before we take a break and get into Europe's Russia collusion scandal. Ambrose Edmonds-Pritchard here did a great piece, I think it was today, but the title is No European Election Ever Deflects the EU Deep State One Inch from Its Rigid Course. And he makes a lot of good points in this article, but it does a great job of showing how Germany controls the European Union and its institutions. You know, we talk about that a lot on this show, and you can really see the fruits of Germany control the European Union. You know, you can watch world events and see that they're the ones in the driving seat. You look at what happens with the Euro crisis, you know, just about everything. You see they're the ones making the major decisions. Well, how does that happen? And he does a great job of going through part of that. Now, part of it is just because Germany's the richest, the most populous, the most powerful nation in the bloc. And so that means that whatever they say tends to go. You know, they provide a whole lot of the funds. If people get into trouble, they've got to look to Germany for the money. And following the money is usually a great way of seeing who's in charge. But he brings out another aspect to that in this article. So he talks about how European elections, how a lot of the Eurosceptics, they get to Parliament, they don't really get to grips with how everything works. And so he writes, day-to-day matters are left to Team Germany and its satellites. This is not to make an anti-German point, but simply to state a fact of European life. German MEPs are career legislators. Election is the path to a long, a lifetime job. And he just talks about how the promotion system that really encourages them to stick around in the European Parliament, to understand how it works, to initiate laws and legislation. Well, Parliament can't initiate laws and legislation, but to participate in the process of laws and legislation. And then he writes, when push comes to shove, these Germans, they operate as a single cohort, blurring the lines between social democrats and Christian democrats. Today's grand coalition in Berlin has long been operating in Strasbourg. So they're in different parties, but they tend to all just act for Germany. This professionalism, he writes, is why the two core groupings are both run by Germans. So both the main left-wing party and the main right-wing party grouping in the European Parliament are run by Germans. Now, the way politics works in the European Parliament is you have different, all across Europe, different people from different political parties go into Parliament, and then they serve in kind of these groupings of lots of different similar parties. So, for example, you've got the Conservative Party in the UK. They have conservative members stand for election in the European Parliament. And then when they go there, they're in an alliance with other conservative groups from all across Europe to form this party grouping. So the main party grouping for center-right parties in Europe is led by a German, Manfred Weber. And then the main center-left or socialist party, I guess socialist isn't really center-left, but the main left-wing party in the European Parliament, made up of all these left-wing parties from across Europe, well, that's also led by a German, Udo Bollmann. And then Ambrose Evans Pritchard goes on to write, Klaus Weller runs the engine room as Secretary General of the Parliament, while his countryman Martin Selmar operates in tandem as head of the Commission apparatus. The nodal points are in capable German hands. So a lot of these key positions are in German hands. And I'll note, not necessarily the most high-profile ones. Often the German politicians, less and less these days, but often they'll avoid the limelight. You know, they'll avoid really being very obviously the ones in power, because if they're the ones very obviously telling other people what to do, and if people can really see, well, there's an obvious German in this position, and this position, and this position, they're running the whole thing, that will kind of stir up more opposition. So you have a look, and instead, the situation at the moment, well, you've got the European Commission President is Donald Tusk, he's Polish. The head of the European Central Bank is Mario Draghi from Italy. You've got Jean-Claude Juncker. Oh, sorry. Yeah, Donald Tusk. Europe has way too many presidents. Donald Tusk is one president. I think he's actually the European Council president. But then you've also got Jean-Claude Juncker, who's the European Commission president, who's from Luxembourg. So all of these key positions, not German. Now, the European Parliament president is German, and Manfred Weber is running to be European Commission president. So I think the time where they would kind of operate from the background is coming to a close. But the point Ambrose Evans Pritchard makes is a really important one, that these more like civil service positions, these ones that you don't notice as much, you know, Secretary General of the Parliament, Martin Selmayr is kind of head of the bureaucracy that runs in the European Commission. They're not the big public positions, but they're often run by Germans. He goes on to write, "As you know, what struck me during the Eurozone banking crisis is how Berlin quietly took control of every body that mattered. Klaus Regling heads up the bailout fund, the EFSF and ESM, a dutiful enforcer answering to Wolfgang Schäuble steering the Eurogroup star chamber." So all of these key positions going to Germany. And he goes through that article how the EU has promised to change before but never managed it, before concluding, winning elections is never quite enough in the European Union. Something very important to bear in mind as you have these European elections taking place today. Well, that's a good summary. Like I said, you know, we talk about Germany leading Europe. I do get some questions about, well, how do they do that? And I think that's part of the answer. Now, we'll talk a lot more about what the Bible says about the European Union and the character of this union in the second half. So we'll get to that in just a minute. But we'll take a break for a couple of minutes and then come back and talk about Europe's Russia collusion scandal.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. An exciting, pulsating, vital third of all the Bible is devoted to prophecy. And approximately 90% of all prophecy pertains to our time, now, in this 21st century. It is a warning to us, to our English-speaking peoples, of immediate life and death import. The prophecies come alive once their doors are opened by this now-discovered master key. The United States and Britain in prophecy will open, to open minds, this hitherto closed vital third of all the Bible. No story of fiction ever was so strange, so fascinating, so absorbing, so packed with interest and suspense as this gripping story of our identity and our ancestry. Request the United States and Britain in Prophecy and a free one-year subscription to the Trumpet magazine right now. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. Well, in the first half, we're talking about European elections that have been kicking off today. And as I mentioned in the first half, polls indicate that Eurosceptic parties are going to do very well, potentially winning a third of the votes, even perhaps becoming the most significant party grouping in the European Parliament. Now, that would be pretty entertaining to watch. You'd see lots of these politicians getting up and denouncing Europe right from the belly of the beast. Whether or not it will change anything, like we read in the first half, a lot of these politicians don't end up changing things. The EU pretty much moves forward regardless. But I'm not going to make any predictions right now beyond what I already have about the results. But I will make one about the way Europe will respond to these elections. If these Eurosceptics win big, if they end up doing really well, having these major seats in the European Parliament, well, expect mainstream politicians to blame Russia. Russia and fake news. In a very similar way to the way the Democrats have reacted to the election of Donald Trump. And I think the parallels between the two are really interesting. But they'll respond, if they do badly, I think they'll respond in the same way. And you can see them already laying the groundwork for that. And just like in the US, while it's a convenient excuse for the failure, in this case of the mainstream pro-European parties for Europe, both on the left and on the right, it's also a convenient excuse for the European Union to grab more power, more control. And as I said, for months they've been laying the groundwork for this. Back in November, European Commissioner for Justice and Consumer Policy, he warned the European Parliament about allegations of dark financing from undisclosed third country sources, and he named Russia as the top culprit. Actually, he was on the news just over the last couple of days on CNBC talking about exactly that. We can hear a clip from him blaming Russia for the rise of Eurosceptics just quickly now.
But now some of those parties, but also newcomers, have adopted more nationalistic approach. And basically it means that they want to weaken and fragment the EU. And some of those have also very close connection to Russia, to President Putin. So Russia has obviously financed some of those parties. They have interfered to our democratic processes, for instance, referenda or national elections, in order to weaken the EU and in order to create division between the people inside the country.
Sorry, that was actually the European Commission Vice President who was talking about that in that news report. But still, this is something the European Commission was talking about back in November. Former NATO Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen, and he and 14 other political leaders, they launched a joint initiative to combat Russian election meddling back in February. And that, of course, was accompanied by lots of fanfare about this Russian election threat. On May 12th, this is from the New York Times, they've jumped on board this. They reported that a constellation of websites and social media accounts linked to Russia or far-right groups is spreading disinformation, encouraging discord, and amplifying distrust in the centrist parties that have governed Europe for decades. They continued, European Union investigators, academics, and advocacy groups say that the new disinformation efforts share many of the same digital fingerprints or tactics used in previous Russian attacks, including Kremlin's interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential campaign. Just a couple of days ago, Guy Verhofstadt, he's the leader of the Alliance of Liberals and Democrats for Europe. That's a left-wing grouping in the European Parliament. He wrote that Eurosceptic parties have essentially become a Russian fifth column within the European Union. So he's blaming them, just saying, well, they're just basically Russian puppets. The trouble is, there's very little evidence of any substantial Russian interference in these elections. They've been talking about this, and talking about it for a long time, but the facts just aren't there. Sasha Havlicek, I've probably completely butchered that, head of London's Institute for Strategic Dialogue, she said that we are not seeing the automated network activity with an obvious Russian fingerprint across these elections. The Washington Post wrote, European leaders commissioned reports about foreign meddling, enlisting intelligence services in efforts to be vigilant, and pushed social media companies to produce their platforms, or to police their platforms. So a lot of talk about this. A lot of saying to the tech companies, well, we need you to look into this, saying intelligence companies, be on guard for this. Go look, see if you can find evidence of this. But then they wrote, but the worst fears about Kremlin involvement have not manifested, officials and analysts have said. Facebook, Twitter, and Google, they've all said they can't find evidence of this actually happening. But that hasn't stopped the flood of hysterical articles. You know, I've mentioned a few, but I haven't cherry-picked by any means. You can go and find a whole lot of articles talking about this. Actually, we'll just listen to a couple of news reports. I think we'll do the first from Deutsche Welle and then one from France 24. Just again, from the last couple of days, talking about how Russia is about to steal this election.
Bienvenue tous, welcome to Reporters Plus here on France 24, our in-depth look at the stories that matter. In this edition, we investigate the claims of Russia's attempts to influence and undermine the democratic system in Europe. France, as one of the pillars of the European Union, continues to be a target. Russian international media has been engaged in a campaign to promote the far right and try to destabilize French society. And from their coverage of the Gilets Jaunes to the European elections, we've uncovered a bias in storytelling and coverage aimed at promoting anti-EU views. Our journalists have spoken to eyewitnesses who've seen the infamous Russian internet troll factory from the inside and the proof that it's a project linked directly to the Kremlin. Its aim, create fake accounts, spread fake news, spread it even further via dubious websites. Our reporters, Catherine Norris-Trent, Julie Dungelhoff, Anya Stroganova, with this report, a joint investigation by France 24 and Deutsche Welle.
So this idea of Russia stealing the election has been all the rage all over the media in and from European officials in the run-up to this election. Now, I don't deny that Russia has tried to influence elections and spread fake news. I've written on this myself for years, going back long before Donald Trump was even a parliamentary candidate and before the media jumped on board of this. You know, they do have Russia Today and Sputnik and these government-owned news organizations that do basically put out the news according to Vladimir Putin, that do subtly twist and distort facts to try and prevent a false narrative, that give you basically, you know, what Putin wants, the worldview that Putin wants you to have. And yeah, I think these have had an effect in the world, especially in certain Eastern European countries. Maybe if you look at the east of Ukraine, Moldova, and down into the Balkans, where for some people, Russia Today and these Russian-backed media operations have had a significant effect swaying voters. You look at Vladimir Putin's approval rating, and a good chunk of that is probably because he controls the news within Russia. So sure, you know, Russia does try to deceive. They do spread fake news, it has had some effect. But at the same time, when you look at what's going on, well, both in the United States, you know, it's not, and I think that's proven now with what we've seen from the Mueller report, with even some of the statistics that have come out, you know, it's not had a significant effect in terms of tilting an election there. Maybe they tried, I think they did try just to spread confusion and debate, which they've succeeded on mostly more because of the Democrats have been blowing this whole thing up, and they've helped it succeed probably beyond Russia's wildest dreams. But in terms of influencing elections within the West, there's very little evidence they've really changed many people's or anybody's vote at all. With Europe, yeah, maybe there's been some small Russia Today effect, but it's been completely dwarfed by much bigger factors. European voters, they're voting against pro-Europeans, not because they've been duped by Russia Today or anything like that, but generally more because they're angry at their policies. They don't like they disagree with what they're doing. You know, they're fed up with EU politicians flooding their countries with migrants. They're fed up with the economic crisis. And, you know, we don't talk about the euro crisis as much, but there are still masses of unemployment in parts of Italy and Spain and Greece. Huge levels of youth unemployment. And we've just stopped talking about it. Politicians have stopped talking about it and they just feel abandoned. They're fed up with a political class that just seems to ignore their concerns, that never seems to change. They're fed up that democracy just doesn't work with the European Union, that they just completely ignore whatever the people vote for and always push for more Europe. And for a mainstream pro-European politicians, addressing that is hard. It's much easier to just blame the Russians. Oh, they only voted that way because they were duped by the Russians. And besides, if Russian collusion is something that we need to be worried about, and as I said, I think it is to a certain extent, well, there's much bigger, much more important, much more dramatic collusion to point to. You know, point the finger instead at Germany's government and their pipeline dealings with Vladimir Putin. With the fact that it's not Eurosceptic parties, it's not parties that want to leave the European Union, it's Angela Merkel that's working closely with Vladimir Putin to build this pipeline under the North Sea to Germany. That is, you know, doing this deal that will allow Putin, will allow Russia to have much, much greater control over Eastern Europe. It's going to allow them to be able to cut off natural gas supplies to Poland, say, or to Ukraine, or to all of these countries in Central and Eastern Europe, and then continue supplying Germany. That's a major collusion scandal. The Poles have taken to calling this the Molotov-Ribbentrop 2 pipeline. After that pact between Hitler and Stalin, where the two of them just, you know, sold out Eastern Europe, divided it up between them. That's some real Russian collusion scandal to investigate and to get worried about of what's going on with Europe. That's where Russians are colluding for real, real effect. You can read more about that, actually, from our editor-in-chief, Mr. Florian, Germany and Russia's Secret War Against America, an article he wrote in the September 2018 Trumpet print edition. As he brings out in there, you've also got a former German chancellor playing a major role in a Russian-owned, in Gazprom, you know, this Russian-owned company. And you know, he's there, you know, he'll attend Vladimir Putin's birthday party. He's good friends with Putin. So yes, some of these Eurosceptic parties may be getting a bit of financing from Russia, as well as lots of financing from other places too. But you know, what about Angela Merkel's party? What about Gerhard Schroeder that's best pals with Putin? So you've got these mainstream parties and politicians in Germany's own government brazenly accusing others of colluding with Russia while colluding with Russia themselves. Bit like the Democrats in the United States. And we saw this in Britain's Brexit referendum. Here's just a quick clip from former Labour Party Minister Ben Bradshaw talking about Russia's role in the Brexit vote.
I don't think we have even begun to wake up to what Russia is doing when it comes to cyber warfare. Not only their interference, now proven in the American presidential campaign, probably in our own referendum last year. We don't have the evidence for that yet, but I think it's highly probable. Certainly in the French presidential election, they will be involved, and there are already serious concerns in the German Secret Service that Russia is already interfering in the elections coming up. We've got to wake up to this. When are we going to wake up to this?
So, you know, there he's saying, well, it was Russian cyber warfare that caused Britain to vote Brexit. It wasn't that people wanted to leave the European Union. It wasn't that the European Union had been bad for Britain or any of those things. It had to be Russian cyber warfare. You know, the Guardian, since Brexit, has kind of begun this descent into bizarre left-wing conspiracy theories about Brexit and Russia. You know, they even had an article claiming that Nigel Farage was ferrying data between Donald Trump's campaign and the WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange on a USB stick as part of kind of one vast Russian conspiracy to steal both the Brexit vote and the United States presidential elections. There was a London School of Economics professor. He even claimed that Russian interference means that the Brexit referendum is invalid. We need a second referendum because Russia stole it. And again, this is despite the fact that there are no facts here. You know, Russia went, you know, Twitter went and they got the government, got Twitter to go and look into, okay, well, you know, we know there's this Internet Research Institute in Russia and you know, they've got this operation to try and influence elections. Well, how many people with links to Russia, how many accounts were there tweeting about the Brexit vote? And the number came back 105. A tiny amount. Then they went to Facebook and you know they got Facebook to look into, well, how much money did these groups linked to Russia spend on the Brexit referendum? And Facebook came back 73p. Not even a pound, just 73p. That doesn't even come to a dollar in US money. 73 pence on Facebook ads. They reached a total of 200 people. That's really an election swinging effort there. Now, it is ridiculous. It can be frustrating. But there is a sinister side to all of this. In December, the EU announced that it was launching a war on fake news. So here now, all of these accusations for of Russian interference, well, it's the perfect excuse for the EU to come along now and to start to overrule democracy. Again, just like you see in the United States, with the Russian scandal being tried to use as an excuse to bring down the president that won an election. Now, Channel 4's Fact Check, who they are far from a Eurosceptic institution. They went through they looked at the European Union's announcement on a war on fake news, and they were quite concerned, actually. They wrote that some officials clearly believe that the battle against misinformation was actually a battle against Eurosceptics. They saw their mission in this fight as defending the EU and its institutions. The European Parliament's vice president, they wrote that he laid this out in stark terms, admitting that the campaign against fake news should aim to stop certain politicians from winning seats in the EU's next election. So that's what this is really about. It's not about stopping things that are not true. It's stopping people that those at the top of the EU don't like winning seats. It's about manipulating democracy. It went through the EU's all of the EU's own documents that outlined their wars against fake news. And they concluded that the effort, quote, seems explicitly designed to protect the EU and its institutions and stop Eurosceptic politicians making progress in elections. That's what this is really about. Now, how much more are they going to step that up if European politicians make great strides this week? If they do really well. They're already putting pressure on social media companies to clamp down on fake news, which, as we've just read, to the EU means anti-EU news. Now, that's pretty much their definition. If it's anti-EU, well, then it's fake news. They've stepped up their monitoring of social media. They issue regular reports on news articles that are shared widely on social media so they can kind of keep tabs on what people are reading. And it's easy to see the EU launching a push to control the press if it blames an election setback on Russian fake news. It's already threatening social media with more regulation if companies don't voluntarily sign up to the EU's code of practice on disinformation. So when we look at everything the EU is doing to try and clamp down and make disinformation illegal, well, it's useful to ask, what does the EU define as disinformation? And we can know exactly, because in 2015, the EU set up its EU versus disinformation campaign and launched its disinformation review, where it takes what it says is disinformation and labels it and says, you know, this quote here, this statement is disinformation. So let's have a look at what the EU labels as disinformation. So here's one quote from their website that they labeled as disinformation. The European Commission is one of the most undemocratic institutions. These people, EU commissioners, were not elected by anyone and are not accountable to EU citizens. So that's disinformation. The trouble is, It's true. I mean, I guess European Commission, one of the most undemocratic institutions. Well, that's kind of subjective. It's hard to quantify how undemocratic an institution is, so it's hard to label that either true or false. But then that next point, well, European Commissions, weren't, they're not elected by anyone. That's not how they're appointed. They're generally kind of civil servant or bureaucrats that are appointed by national governments. And nobody really pays much attention to who they are. Yes, the European Parliament can veto them. They can veto their appointment. They can't recall them. So just being able to potentially veto an appointment, that's not democratic accountability. You know, they can't recall, they can't bring them back if they disagree with things that they're doing. And there's a big question about, is the European Parliament itself democratic? Can it be democratic? Can you have a democracy when you don't have, there's two words in democracy, krasi, power, demos, people. And when you don't have one group of people that have committed to make common sacrifices to each other and have a system of common government, you can't really have shared power and you can't have a democracy in a meaningful sense. I mean, I'm going off on a tangent a bit there. But the point is, that's not fake news. European commissioners, they're not elected. They're not accountable. That's true. Here's another example. The European Parliament is a place of corruption. Voting in the election is worthless. Well, that's true. European Parliament is a place of corruption. There have been a whole number of news stories that have demonstrated that the European Parliament is corrupt. And the rebuttal by the EU Disinformation Review doesn't even begin to address the issue of corruption. But you know, just there was a news story just about a month ago about European Parliament members, they're allowed to claim money for running an office in Brussels, so to help them do their job. And this the EU Observer did an investigation and they found that a bunch of these MEPs were running fake offices. When they asked them the address, they gave them places that didn't exist. I think one third of them, they did some survey, either didn't list the address of their office or had a fake address for their office. They're claiming money to run offices that don't exist. And it could be a third of them doing that. That's corrupt. There's been a whole bunch of things done on the way that, you know, they've finally clamped down on it, but it used to be common for MEPs to claim that their wife was their secretary, which gave them an opportunity to pay them directly out of the European Parliament budget. And they'd often find that these people they were paying were doing no secretarial work at all. There was a big scandal of huge numbers of European Parliament members just, you know, they get to claim an allowance every day that they're in Parliament working. And there used to be there was this big scandal of European parliamentarians. They show up, they sign the book to show that they're there, and then they leave again. You know, the only thing they do is to sign up to get their money, and that's it. And this is an institution where they vote themselves all kinds of generous perks, and you know, they get all kinds of just incredible subsidized or free food. It's an absolute racket. They submit dodgy expense claims. They pay a special low rate of tax that nobody else in the European Union pays. They get a special low rate. By any objective measure, it's a corrupt place. It is a place of corruption. But that, according to the EU Disinformation Review, well, that's fake news. Here's another one. Voting in the European Parliament elections will bring no benefit to the Latvian people. That was labeled disinformation. That was labeled fake news. Well, apparently the EU can see into the future. That forecast they've said is fake. And the list goes on. Like I said, those are examples just from the last couple of months. And so that's the kind of story that the EU wants erased from social media. And pretty soon, print media. That's fake news. That's disinformation, according to them. You know, and if social media companies, if they don't get rid of those stories now, well, EU legislators and bureaucrats said they'll pass laws or enact legislation to get rid of that. So soon you might not be allowed to call European leaders corrupt. Well, that's fake news. You can't say that. You can't call the EU undemocratic soon. That, you say that on social media, well, that might be labeled disinformation and banned. Or if you deny that the European, if you even deny that Europe, the European Union brings benefits, if you say, well, there are no benefits from the European Parliament, or there's no benefits from Europe, there's no benefits to vote. Well, that's no, that's disinformation. Europe brings benefits. That's absolutely, unquestionably true. That's what they're starting to put, or what, that's already the kind of guidelines they're giving to social media companies. We want you to get rid of this, or we're going to regulate you more. And, well, this EU versus disinformation campaign, it used to be even worse. Even the Dutch parliament complained about it. They called for it to be shut down because it was flagging up true stories as fake news. Now, the EU, they did, once they got that telling off from the Dutch parliament, they did step back a bit. There was a they got reported to the European Court of Justice, and there was a bit of a court case as well. So they've been more restrictive with what they label fake news. And what we looked at was the more restrictive version. Those three examples I gave you was from them being more restrictive on what they labeled fake news. Before then, it was just about anything or anything that was critical of the EU was just labeled fake news. Now, Europe's latest law cracking down on social media, that's the cover article of the latest Trumpet edition that just went online last night. And in the cover article for that, Germany's getting control of the internet. Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry, he wrote, Germany's ambitions for the internet should concern everyone, even those who don't have a computer. The EU's behavior on this issue exposes the dictatorial nature of this German-dominated entity. Really, we are witnessing the manifestation of the spirit of the Holy Roman Empire in the tech world. And we see the same spirit in this European version of the Russian collusion scandal. Those at the top of the EU, they view themselves as the preordained masters of the universe. If people vote against their policies, well, it can't be because the policies are wrong. Instead, it has to be the result of some outside malign actor, Russia. While in the public, well, they can't be trusted to choose for themselves what they read. If they do that, well, they might get the answer wrong. And by voting against the EU, they've proven, well, they're too stupid to be trusted to have that responsibility of choosing what news articles they read. To help them vote in a more educated way, well, the EU has to select what news they're presented with. And thus, each setback of the European Union becomes just yet another reason for the EU to do more. And it's, well, it's exactly the same spirit that you see in the Russian collusion scandal in the US. Those opposed to President Donald Trump see themselves as the smart, sophisticated, default leaders of America. If they lose an election to someone like Mr. Trump, well, again, something's badly wrong. That's not the natural order of things. Well, it couldn't be that they've made a mistake. Well, it must be Russia. And they need a way to regain power. Because, well, if they're not in power, then obviously things are going to go horribly wrong. And so, again, well, blaming Russia, that's the convenient way of doing that. And the Bible clearly explains the EU's behavior. It's in the early stages. I don't want to say very early because it's getting pretty developed. But the early stages of an empire that's risen in Europe repeatedly. The Holy Roman Empire. Here's what Mr. Flurry said on A Key of David on this social media regulation a few weeks ago.
Mr. Habsburg also said, we possess a European symbol which belongs to all nations of Europe equally. This is the crown of the Holy Roman Empire. See, they have that symbol, they have that crown and all the crown jewels and all that, and all they need now is their Charlemagne to sit on that throne, and then he will have the crown and the crown jewels and all of that. See, Hitler was, he called his empire the Third Reich. Charlemagne's was called the First Reich, or the First Empire. That's what that means. They don't want, Germany wants more than just to rule a nation, their own nation. They want an empire. That's what this is all about. They want to control the internet. And do you suppose they want to control the world? Well, the Holy Roman Empire has made an attempt to do just that every time it's risen. Now, we ought to think about that. The spirit of Charlemagne has returned.
So the spirit of that empire is all about control. And that's what they want with the... Or that's could well be the outcome. Well, that's already what they're pushing for with this whole fake news issue. And if they lose the election or they do badly in the election, something they'll push for even more control of what people read, what they see online. You know, the EU's elections this week, the ones taking place today, they're an opportunity for you to watch the spirit of the Holy Roman Empire in action as it collides with democracy. They'll just push for more regulation of social media and of the press. Now, that article, Germany's taking control of the internet, that's up online. So please go read that to understand more about this spirit of the Holy Roman Empire. We also have our free book, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. It will take you through what the Bible says about this empire rising in Europe, because there is a lot packed in the Bible on it. You know, Revelation 17, for example, describes this power that is constantly resurrected. It's a beast power, it's an empire, a world-ruling empire, but then it disappears, and it comes back again, and it disappears again. And so we can look back at history and see when this empire has been ruling in the past, and we can see what it was like then, and that tells us a lot about what it's going to be like soon. It tells us about the spirit and the character of this empire, and it is all about control. It is one that won't brook any opposition. And you see that spirit rising in Europe today. You see that spirit with the latest social media regulation that Mr. Flurry talks about in that article, the way they want to control what goes up on these different social media platforms. And you see that spirit in the way that they react to democracy, to criticism. Well, if anything's against us, it must be fake news. We must stop people saying that. It's the spirit of this Holy Roman Empire coming right back up before your eyes. So you need to understand that history. You need to understand what the Bible says about it. And that's laid out clearly and in great detail in that book, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. You can get that on our website, thetrumpet.com. Again, top right-hand corner, library, books and booklets. And we'd be more than happy for you to send you a free copy of that. Well, that is about all I have time for today. Thanks for listening. Please do tune in tomorrow, where I believe Mr. Dwight Falk will be covering this show from our headquarters campus in Edmond, Oklahoma. Please do keep in touch. You can email us at kpcg or td@kpcg.fm. You can also leave us an audio comment at thetrumpet.com. Just click on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show box on the right there, and you can make a recording for us. Well, thanks for listening. As I said, tune in again tomorrow here on KPCG at 101.3 on the FM dial in the Edmond, Oklahoma area, and online at kpcg.fm.